Just a reminder that we are still in review mode. We're catching up from what we did a year ago, and we have one more review lesson after tonight, and then we'll be right back where we left off last year. But so by virtue of this being review, we're going through some of this pretty quickly, just to bring you up to speed as far as the things that we covered last year. We're going to cover about six chapters tonight, and so obviously we're not going to cover them, all the details in all of those six chapters. But remember, the three friends of Job had a total of nine chapters attributed to them, and Job has 20 chapters attributed to him. So we had a few of his chapters to deal with last year that we didn't get to, so we're not covering all 20 in our review, but next week we'll finish up with the review and then get into the new material. But in spite of what Satan hoped for, Job continued to hold to his faith and disappoint Satan. Remember how this all got started, and remember it was God who brought up the subject of Job. That will play into our review tonight. So let's go to chapter 12 in the book of Job. In chapter 12, Job makes the case that God indeed is in control of all things. He says, beginning in verse 7, ask the animals. Verse 7, but ask now the beasts, and they shall teach thee, and the fowls of the air, and they shall tell thee, or speak to the earth, and it shall teach thee, and the fishes of the sea shall declare unto thee. Who knoweth not in all these that the hand of the Lord hath wrought this? God is in control of everything, he says. And the evidence of his sovereignty is everywhere. Verse 10, in whose hand is the soul of every living thing and the breath of all mankind. Notice how he makes a distinction between every living thing and mankind. Job understood that man was not just an animal species. He was distinct from the animal world. But he continues on and says in verse 13, with him, that is, with God, is wisdom and strength. He hath counsel and understanding. Behold, he breaketh down, and it cannot be built again. He shutteth up a man, and there can be no opening. Behold, he withholdeth the waters, and they dry up. Also, he sendeth them out, and they overturn the earth. With him is strength and wisdom. The deceived and the deceiver are his. He leadeth counselors away spoiled, and maketh the judges fools. He looseth the bond of kings, and girdeth their loins with a girdle. He leadeth princes away spoiled, and overthroweth the mighty. He removeth away the speech of the trusty, and taketh away the understanding of the aged. He poureth contempt upon princes, and weakeneth the strength of the mighty. And on he goes. You see, he's covering a lot of territory here and saying, look, God is in control of all of this. In essence, what Job is saying is that people are like fish in the water. Fish can go anywhere they want to in the water, but they can't survive outside of the water. Man can go anywhere he wants to inside of what God allows in the context of his sovereignty. But they cannot survive outside of the allowance of the sovereignty of God. Chapter 13. Chapter 13, verse 1, Job says, I am not inferior to you. Actually, he says it in verse 2. It's kind of plain. Sometimes I kind of put in my own words what Job has said. I don't have to do it. It's pretty plain here in this case. He says at the end of verse 2, I am not inferior to you. That's making it rather plain. He says, you are a bunch of liars. So just stop talking. Verse 3, surely I would speak to the Almighty and I desire to reason with God, but ye are forgers of lies. Ye are all physicians of no value. Oh, that ye would altogether hold your peace. You're just a bunch of liars. We just stop talking. In fact, he says, you are mocking God by talking and the things that you're saying. Verse 7, will ye speak wickedly for God and talk deceitfully for him? Will ye accept his person? Will ye contend for God? Is it good that he should search you out? Or as one man mocketh another, do ye so mock him? They are mocking God by pretending to be so right in what they're saying, so superior, shall I say, in what they are saying. The friends were spewing out a lot of false doctrine, but attributing it to God. You know, when we make up things or imagine things in our own thoughts, but give God credit for it, it's difficult to refute that. You know, somebody says, well, God told me this. And what do you say? Well, if God told you, it must be true, right? Unfortunately, a lot of people claim that God told them things that God never told them. And so, Job says, God will deal with you. Verse 10 of chapter 13, he will surely reprove you. Verse 11, shall not his excellency make you afraid? Which, at this point, Job's friends were not afraid of anything, it seemed. So he says in verse 13 of chapter 13, hold your peace, let me alone, that I may speak, and let come on me what will. Will you just stop talking and let me alone? Sometimes you feel like that with some people, right? Just stop talking. Let me alone. Job declares his determination to trust in God to the end. And this is that remarkable statement in verse 15. Though he slay me, yet will I trust him. Can you say that? Can you endure whatever suffering God allows in your life, even to the point of death, and still say, God makes no mistakes? Makes me think of the martyrs in the days of the Inquisition back in medieval times being burned at the stake and singing hymns while they were suffering in the flames. Job says in verse 16, he also shall be my salvation. So Job pleads his case. Chapter 13, verse 18, behold, now I have ordered my cause. I know that I shall be justified. Who is he that will plead with me? He says, nobody else is going to plead my case. I'll plead my case myself. He's ready to have a conversation with God. He really wants to have a conversation with God. And he says in verses 20 and 21 that he has two things he does not want God to do. Verse 20, only do not two things unto me, then will I not hide myself from thee. And the two things are given to us in verse 21. Withdraw thine hand from me, and let not thy dread make me afraid. So here's the two things. He says, do not withdraw your hand from me. Don't take your hand away from me. You know, when the hand of God is upon us, or we are in the hand of God, that's a pretty secure place. In spite of what may appear to be devastating circumstances, it's still a secure place to be in the hand of God. And he says, please, God, don't withdraw your hand from me. And please, God, don't make me afraid. He's fighting fear. But that's a good thing. He hasn't given in to it. He's fighting it. So he says to God, let's talk. Verse 22 of chapter 13, then call thou, and I will answer. Or let me speak, and answer thou me. I don't care who starts the conversation, God. I just want to have a conversation. Let's talk. He says, God, I'd like to know what it is that I've done that has offended you. Verse 23. How many are mine iniquities and sins? Make me to know my transgression and my sin. Remember from last week, there's a distinction between his relationship with his friends and his relationship with God. With his friends, he claims to be absolutely righteous. He hasn't done anything wrong. And to be blameless in human society is to conform perfectly to the morals of human society and not be guilty of any crime or ethic violation. But in our relationship with God, we are all deficient. Some people struggle with whether or not God created sin. Have you ever heard that discussion? Did God create sin? No, he didn't create sin. Let me put it like this. It was inevitable for any creature he created to be susceptible to sinful activity, because the only one that is totally immune to sin is God. And he's not going to create another God, because that would be contrary to his nature. Part of his nature is that he's the only one. So he's not going to create another God. And anything, any kind of creature that he does create will be susceptible to, as the angels proved, they had a choice. They had to make a choice. Some made the right choice, but the angels demonstrated they had the capacity to sin. And mankind didn't take very long to demonstrate that as well. I suppose it's possible if God had created thousands of human beings at one time that some, by seeing the fault of others, might have made the right choice, as we had with the angels. Multiple angels, some of them choosing to sin, others recognizing by their error that that was the wrong choice, but still they had the capacity to follow Satan. No, God didn't create sin. Man simply had the capacity to sin because he was not God. And so Job recognizes the weakness of his flesh in his relationship with God. While he will not admit to anything wrong in his relationship with his friends, he recognizes that he's a sinner as far as God is concerned. And he wants to know, what have I done to offend you? God, why do you consider me an enemy? Verse 24, wherefore hidest thou thy face and holdest me for thine enemy? Why do you treat me like an enemy? He says in verse 25, as an illustration, wilt thou break a leaf driven to and fro? And have you ever seen the dried, the leaves that fell off the tree and they're dried, they're on the ground, but it's the whole leaf. How difficult is it to cause that dried up leaf to crumble into little pieces? Not very difficult, is it? And God says, Job says to God, you're treating me like a dried leaf blowing in the wind. I'm that fragile compared to you. And I don't understand why. In fact, he says, I'm your prisoner. Verse 27, thou puttest my feet also in the stocks and lookest narrowly unto all my paths and settest a print upon the heels of my feet. Now, this fella in the stocks on the screen has shoes on, but they would put people in the stocks back in Job's day with bare feet, and they would print on the heels of the feet. Actually, I should say the whip would make prints on the heels of the feet. They would whip the feet. The bottoms of your feet are pretty tender, right? If you're sitting there and you can't get out of the stocks and you have bare feet sticking out there and somebody's whipping the bottoms of your feet, how's that going to feel? Not too good. That's what he says, settest a print upon the heels of my feet. It's like I'm in the stocks and you're whipping the bottoms of my feet. Chapter 14. He says, the life of a man is fragile, verse 1 of chapter 14. Man that is born of a woman is of few days and full of trouble. He cometh forth like a flower and is cut down. He fleeth also as a shadow and continueth not. So he wants to know why, if man is so fragile, why, God, do you cause man so much trouble? Verse 3. And dost thou open thine eyes upon such an one and bringest me into judgment with thee? Life is fragile enough, he says. Why are you adding this trouble? He says, a man's days on earth are numbered. Verse 4, who can bring a clean thing out of an unclean? Not one. Seeing his days are determined, the number of his months are with thee. Thou hast appointed his bounds that he cannot pass. God has determined how many months you're going to live on the earth, and that's it. Now, it is possible that some can die prematurely, I believe. But there is a limit to your life. It's numbered by the months, and God has determined for each one of us how many months we get to live on earth. He says in verse 7, for there is hope of a tree, if it be cut down, that it will sprout again, and that the tender branch thereof will not cease. There are some trees that if you cut them down, the stump will sprout, and it will grow. Not true with every tree, but some trees, that's true. As long as the root is there, the tree will grow back. But he says in verse 10, man dieth and wasteth away, yea, man giveth up the ghost. And where is he? You only get to live once. A tree might get a second chance, but a man doesn't. So he says, I am waiting for my days to end. Verse 13 of chapter 14, oh, that thou wouldest hide me in the grave, that thou wouldest keep me secret until my wrath be past. that thou wouldest appoint me a set time and remember me. Remember, he believes in the physical resurrection. And so he sees death as his means of escape, and the appointed time he's talking about is the resurrection. He says in verse 14, if a man die, shall he live again? He's talking entirely physically in that regard. Am I going to re-sprout like the stump of a tree? If a man dies, it's appointed unto man once to die. And you only get one time on earth in this physical world. But verse 14 continues, all the days of my appointed time will I wait till my change come. And that's the physical resurrection and glorification. That's his escape. That's the only way he sees he can get out of this. So he says, in the meantime, you have me right where you want me. Verse 15, he says, thou shalt call and I will answer. Thou wilt have a desire to the work of thy hands. For now thou numberest my steps. Dost thou not watch over my sin? My transgression is sealed up in a bag, and thou sewest up mine iniquity. And surely the mountain falling cometh to naught, and the rock is removed out of his place. The waters wear the stones, thou washest away the things which grow out of the dust of the earth, and thou destroyest the hope of man. He says, I am a rock moved out of its place by an earthquake. I am a stone worn by the rushing waters. I am plants removed by the floods. The rock has no choice in the matter. That rock falling off the cliff, the rock can't say, I don't want to fall. The stone has no choice in the matter. The plants have no choice in the matter. And so Job says, I have no choice in the matter, verse 20. Thou prevailest forever against him, and he passeth. Thou changest his countenance and sendest him away. Regarding his children, he says in verse 21, his sons come to honor, and he knoweth it not, and they are brought low, but he perceiveth it not of them. Regarding his own suffering, he says in verse 22, but his flesh upon him shall have pain, and his soul within him shall mourn. So this is the way it is. And there is not one thing I can do about it, because God is controlling all of this. Chapter 16. He says, I'm getting grief from both God and my friends. Watch how this goes. Chapter 16, verse 7. But now he, that is God, hath made me weary. Verse 8. And thou, my friends, hast filled me with wrinkles. Verse 9. He, that is God, teareth me in his wrath, and he gnasheth upon me with his teeth. Verse 10. They, my friends, have gaped upon me with their mouth. They have smitten me upon the cheek reproachfully. They have gathered themselves together against me. Verse 11. God hath delivered me to the ungodly and turned me over into the hands of the wicked. I was at ease, but he that is God hath broken me asunder. He hath also taken me by my neck and shaken me to pieces and set me upon his mark. His archers compass me round about. He cleaveth my reins asunder and doth not spare me. He poureth out my gall upon the ground. He breaketh me with breach upon breach. He runneth upon me like a giant. He's gone back and forth between God and the friends, God and the friends, God and the friends. Job feels like he's in a vice, being pressured from both sides. God on the one hand has pressed him with all this trouble, And his friends, on the other hand, oppressed him with all their criticism. And he says, my suffering is totally unjustified. Verse 15 of chapter 16. I have sewed sackcloth upon my skin and defiled my horn in the dust. My face is foul with weeping, and on my eyelids is the shadow of death. Not for any injustice in mine hands. As far as my conduct in human society is concerned, there has been no injustice. And also, he says at the end of verse 17, my prayer is pure. So he says, I appeal to God in heaven. Verse 18, O earth, cover not thou my blood, and let my cry have no place. Also now behold, my witness is in heaven, and my record is on high. My friends scorn me, but mine eye poureth out tears unto God. Oh, that one might plead for a man with God as a man pleadeth for his neighbor. When a few years are come, then I shall go the way whence I shall not return. First Corinthians chapter 4. I think Job feels like Paul felt in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, beginning in verse 1. Let a man so account of us as the ministers of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. Moreover, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. But with me, he says, it is a very small thing that I should be judged of you or of man's judgment. For I judge not mine own self, for I know nothing by myself, yet am I not hereby justified, but he that judgeth me is the Lord. Couldn't resist that little video there. It's like, I don't care. Chapter 17. Verse 7. In the end, the truth will prevail. Mine eye also is dim by reason of sorrow, and all my members are as a shadow. Upright men and righteous men, he says, will see the truth of what is happening and learn from it in days to come. Verse 8, upright men shall be astonished at this, and the innocent shall stir up himself against the hypocrite. The righteous also shall hold on his way, and he that hath clean hands shall be stronger and stronger. That's the heart of why God put the book of Job in the Bible. When we see what Job is having to endure from his friends, we are indeed astonished. Even when we see what God put Job through as far as suffering, that's astonishing. But we'll learn from the way Job handled this situation. And it can make each of us stronger. So he says to his friends in verse 10, but as for you all, do ye return and come now, for I cannot find one wise man among you. His friends could dish it out, but Job could give it right back. He says, I see no way out of this but death. Verse 11, my days are past. My purposes are broken off. Even the thoughts of my heart, they changed the night into day. The light is short because of darkness. If I wait, the grave is mine house. I've made my bed in the darkness. I've said to corruption, thou art my father, to the worm, thou art my mother and my sister. And where is now my hope? As for my hope, who shall see it? They shall go down to the bars of the pit when our rest together is in the dust. All I'm doing is waiting for death to come. Because he's not getting a response from God. Remember, he said, God, let's talk. I'm willing to talk, but God's not talking. I'm trying to talk, God, but you're not responding. You initiate a conversation. I'm willing to talk, but nothing. And time is going by, and the suffering continues, and it's getting harder. Chapter 19. Job does not want to hear rebuke from his friends. He wants an answer from God. He says in verse 5 of chapter 19, if indeed ye will magnify yourselves against me and plead against my reproach, verse 6, know now. He says, there's something I want you to know. And here's what I want you to know. That God hath overthrown me and hath compassed me with his net. None of this is happening because of anything in my life. God is the one who is doing this. And Job is right on. The friends keep insisting that Job had sinned and his suffering is entirely the result of something terrible in Job's life. But Job says, in contradiction to that, that his suffering has absolutely nothing to do with himself, but everything to do with God. And on this point, remember, who is the first one between God and Satan to bring up Job? Remember, God says to Satan, where have you been? Job says, Satan says, I've been wandering around on the earth. And God says, have you considered my servant Job? God set him up. And Job all along understands God has every right to do this. I just don't understand why. So he says, it's not my wickedness that has been a snare to me. It is God himself. But God will not tell me why. Job chapter 19, verse 7. Behold, I cry out of wrong, but I am not heard. I cry aloud, but there is no judgment. I'm waiting to hear from the judge, and the judge will not render a verdict. He says, God has moved violently against me, beginning in verse 8. He hath fenced up my way that I cannot pass, and he hath set darkness in my paths. He hath stripped me of my glory and taken the crown of my head. He hath destroyed me on every side, and I am gone, and mine hope hath he removed like a tree. And mine hope hath he removed like a tree. It's the way I have it arranged on the paper here. Verse 11, he hath also kindled his wrath against me, and he counteth me unto him as one of his enemies. His troops come together and raise up their way against me and encamp round about my tabernacle. He hath put my brethren far from me, and mine acquaintance are very estranged from me. He says, as a result, my family and household have forsaken me. Verse 14, my kinsfolk have failed, and my familiar friends have forgotten me. He's not talking about Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar, but the ones that live close by. Verse 15, they that dwell in mine house and my maids count me for a stranger. I am an alien in their sight. I called my servant and he gave me no answer. I entreated him with my mouth. My breath is strange to my wife, though I entreat it for the children's sake of mine own body. Yea, young children despised me, presumably those of his servants. I arose, he says, and they spake against me. Everybody has forsaken Job, probably because they hear all of this stuff from his friends. And then he says, my friends are turned, all my inward friends abhorred me. In this case, I think he's talking about Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar, and others like them. And they whom I loved are turned against me, he says. My bone cleaveth to my skin and to my flesh, and I am escaped with the skin of my teeth. Did you know that was in the Bible? It appears that the gums of his mouth are the only place in his body not affected by the sores. God wanted him to be able to talk. Oh, yeah. There you go. I am escaped with the skin of my teeth. There's the skin of your teeth. Job pleads with his friends to have pity on him. Verse 21, have pity upon me, he says. Have pity upon me, O my friends, for the hand of God hath touched me. Why do you persecute me as God and are not satisfied with my flesh? Job wishes for a permanent record of his experience. Verse 23, oh, that my words were now written. Well, he got his wish. And we have them. He says, in spite of everything, I know that God has not totally forsaken me. You see, in Job 19, verse 25, I know that my Redeemer liveth. Job believed in divine redemption. Undoubtedly, by the promise initially given by God to Adam and Eve, who would, without a doubt, pass this on down through the generations. Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15, I will put enmity between thee and the woman and between thy seed and her seed. It shall bruise thy head and thou shalt bruise his heel. God, that's what God said to the serpent. The seed of the woman bruising the head of Satan destroys him who has the power of death, according to Hebrews chapter 2. No doubt he believed in divine redemption by the events regarding Cain and Abel. That would no doubt be handed down through the generations. Abel, Genesis chapter 4, verse 4, also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of the fat thereof, and the Lord had respect unto Abel and to his offering. How do you get the fat separated from the animal? You kill it and spill its blood. They understood the concept of blood sacrifice for redemption. Depending upon when Job actually lived, if he lived after Abraham, he would even have the testimony of Abraham. Remember when Abraham was offering Isaac, and Isaac was wondering, where's the lamb? And Abraham said, my son, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. Job believed that he himself was a redeemed person. Verse 25, for I know that my Redeemer liveth, and that he shall stand at the latter day upon the earth. My Redeemer, he says, my Redeemer. I know that my Redeemer liveth. I've been redeemed. And Job believed that the Redeemer would come at the latter time, believing that God himself must be the Redeemer. For I know that my Redeemer liveth, and that he shall stand at the latter day upon the earth. He believes that his Redeemer is alive now. I know that my Redeemer liveth. The Redeemer is now living, present tense, but will also in the latter day stand upon the earth. No mere human being could live that long. He had to understand something about the divine nature of the Redeemer. And it's unclear as to whether Job is referring to the Redeemer's first coming or second coming or which coming. But he is talking about the Redeemer standing on the earth in the latter days, and Job in the resurrection would be able to see him. When I say first coming, I should say whether he's talking about the rapture or the second coming of Christ. You know, Enoch, even before the flood, knew about the second coming of Christ. It's amazing what they did know back in those days. But Job believed in a physical resurrection of the body. In verse 26, he says, "And though after my skin worms destroy this body," it's not the most pleasant thing to talk about, but you know that's how the body decays. Worms come into the body and eat it up. So he says, "After my skin worms destroy the body, yet in my flesh I shall see God." So my body's going to be all eaten up and decayed. But after that, in my flesh, I'm going to see God. Verse 27, "Whom I shall see for myself, and mine eyes shall behold, and not another." It's not going to be somebody else with the name Job. It's going to be me.